Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K., a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Hello, welcome back to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Today, I am super excited to introduce to my audience Stephanie Bolin. She is a nationally certified sign language interpreter and a certified signing smart instructor. Not only that, she is an Orton Gillingham tutor of English, which is an approach to teach children how to read, write, and spell, especially to kiddos that not only have been diagnosed with dyslexia, may have just issues with these tasks in general. It's a great approach because it involves sensory motor learning techniques and interventions. And as an occupational therapist, I find this approach extremely intriguing and interesting and would love to share with you some of the experiences and knowledge that Stephanie has. So please help me introduce Miss Stephanie Bolin to the OT Corner. Hello, Stephanie. Thanks so much for joining me today. Really glad to have you here. I am excited to talk about you and what you do because I think your services are it's a great resource for other occupational therapists, practitioners, as well as educators of what you do out there and how you help some of the students that we serve in our public schools. So Stephanie, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into the world of being an ASL interpreter as well as an instructor.
Yeah, you know, my things have kind of built upon each other as I've grown. I grew up with a whole host of deaf friends in school. And so I started learning ASL when I was probably 5 or 6 years old and just kind of picked it up on the playground from my friends, from their interpreters in school. And so I learned the language really naturally. And when it was time for me to start thinking about college, that's really kind of the direction that I headed. So I graduated from Kent State with my interpreting degree and started interpreting and getting some experience and was able to take my certification test and work as an interpreter. And that's exactly what I wanted to do until I had kids. And then I wanted to do some things that let me be home a little bit more and interact with my kids a little bit more and teach them to sign a little bit. And so I started teaching just infants in the very beginning. But as my kids have grown, the kids that I teach have grown as well. And so now I have the whole swath from infants all the way through. I have some senior citizens taking my adult classes.
How big is a program, like an ASL program, like a Kent State? How many students were in your program with you?
Oh my goodness. Interpreting majors, there was a handful of us. There were maybe a dozen of us when we graduated. A few joined from other schools during the program, but it's a really small program. There's a lot of students who take ASL as a foreign language. But we were a very small, very close-knit little program, which was nice. I enjoyed having that same group of people that we went all the way through the program with.
And I know, you know, when my daughter was in high school, she had the option of taking ASL as a foreign language. So it's interesting that, you know, because when I went to school, I had a friend that actually used to sing and sign together. She used to do that a lot. So she was learning that skill back a long time ago, but it wasn't really offered as a language, like a foreign language. So it's really neat to see that. And then you also are, I was not familiar with this program, but the Orton Gillingham program, you are also trained with that program. What is that program?
I am currently certified at the associate level with the Orton Gillingham Academy. And that is an approach to teaching reading and writing in English that was originally designed for people with dyslexia, but we are realizing more and more that this is just a really great approach to teaching anybody how to read and write. And language is just something that I adore. I'm working on learning some German. I use ASL on a daily basis, and so teaching English in that manner was it really fit.
That's excellent. And like I said, I was not familiar with it. And I love how it incorporates sensory and visual motor. A lot of the stuff that I use as an occupational therapist, when I am guiding somebody through learning how to write, that's what really triggered me. I was like, oh, that's such a cool program. So I wanted to learn a little bit more about that.
Is very cool. Yeah, and it's being multisensory is one of the key pieces of it, so that we're using simultaneously almost throughout an entire lesson visual aspects, auditory aspects, and kinesthetic aspects all together, which really helps the brain connect the things that we're teaching.
As a school-based occupational therapist, I know that there are interventions out there that people use to teach kiddos to read, write, and spell if they have dyslexia or if they just have issues in these areas. I was not really well informed about Wharton-Gillingham until I started talking to Stephanie. What I really found intriguing as an occupational therapist is how much overlap there was between my approach to teaching grasping and manipulating classroom tools to carry out different fine motor tasks in the classroom that she uses when she's teaching these kiddos how to read, write, and spell. Now, I had a lot of questions for Stephanie because I always find it intriguing why educators use certain types of approaches when they're educating their students. I asked Stephanie why she used Wharton-Gillingham, how she came upon it, and what led her down the path of becoming a certified Wharton-Gillingham instructor? All right, so I really wanted to go into the Wharton-Gillingham program. We just were talking a little bit there. And how did you become interested in the program to begin with? Like, what brought you
I
to the
discovered it. I had a child who was really struggling with reading and spelling especially. And so when I approached school and needed some testing, we ran into some roadblocks. And so I started doing some more research about what he needed, what I could do, and learned about the Wharton-Gillingham program. And I said, you know what? There are a ton of kids out there who need this. I need to learn the ins and outs of it. And jumped into a training program and just I love the approach, and I just can't get enough of the training.
So when you go through these training programs, you had mentioned you're at an associate level. How many different levels are there to this program?
So there's a variety of different avenues to take the training. I'm taking mine through the Wharton-Gillingham Academy, and they look at certification in three levels. They have a classroom educator level, which is designed for people who are teaching in the classroom, just like it sounds like. At the associate level means I've taken at least 60 hours worth of coursework and done 100 hours of supervised practicum and submitted some paperwork and a whole giant profile to the academy. And they said, yep, you are on the right track. You still need some mentorship, but you are making some great decisions. So keep learning, keep doing what you're doing. And so I am currently in the process of obtaining that third level, where they consider you fully certified and can work without the leadership of a mentor. So I'm working on taking another 100 hours of training and 200 hours of practicum. And then I'll submit another whole profile, and they'll say, yep, you can make the decisions you need to make. So you don't have to work underneath someone any longer.
So you have like a mentor that you
Yeah, I have a fellow in the academy who I can ask questions of. She checks in with me every now and again. I send her some video recordings of my lessons and she critiques them.
So when you go in and first of all, what I'm curious about, because like I said, I was not very aware of the program. How do families find you then? Like, do they know about the program or is somebody referring them to you? How do you generally get your students?
A lot of word of mouth. It's a lot of just chatting with parents. Oftentimes things come up, oh, hey, my kid's having a tough time learning to read. conversations you have with other parents at school, those sorts of things. And then I can say, you know, hey, I've got this great approach. It's probably not what's being taught at school, but it's a great approach, and we can smooth out some of those bumps. And the spelling piece of it is my absolute favorite. There's all kinds of rules for things in English that I wish I knew when I was a student, but that I've learned now through this program. But one of the first ones that I teach is that there's three ways to make the sound, the k sound. So when we in cat, in kite, in duck, they're all spelled three different ways. And there's a rule for when to use C and when to use K and when to use CK, instead of just relying on our ear and the sound. And those are the things that just opened my eyes. And I went, man, I wish everybody could know about these things. I am not a natural speller. So those rules are magic to me.
That's interesting. And then, so when you take a student, how do you generally evaluate them, or do you do like a pretest? How do you get your baseline?
Yeah, a lot of my students are already on an IEP or have had some sort of formal testing. So I take a look at that. That lets me know kind of where they're functioning generally. What is their working memory like? What's those sorts of things. And then I always do the same assessments with all of my students. We look at phonological awareness, which are pre-reading things. Can you identify the first sound in a word? Can you identify when words rhyme or not? Can you give me a rhyming word when I give you a word? Those sorts of things help us predict that a student is going to be a successful reader and speller. Can you pull a word apart? Can you find the individual sounds in a word to help spell it? I also give them an assessment of individual sounds. So I show them either a letter or a group of letters that make a sound and see what they know. And then I show them some individual words, both real words and nonsense words. And that lets me know what skills they already have. Then I ask them to write some words that follow those same patterns. So that tells me a lot about what they know already and what they don't know quite yet. And then I also do a passage reading. And depending on the student's age, sometimes I do two. With younger students, I use some lists to help me figure out kind of what level they're reading at and give them a passage and time them and listen to them and then ask them some questions about it. So not only are you reading at a specific speed, but are you understanding what you're reading? Because we need to read at a speed that lets us remember what we've read and understand what we've read. And then with older students, I give them a second passage that I don't ask them to read aloud. They read it silently to themselves. And then they're asked to answer some inferential questions. So can they read between the lines and not only pick out things that are specifically stated in the text, but can they find those more nuanced pieces as well? And that helps me know what they already know and what we need to work on.
That's excellent. And then when you develop a program for them, it's obviously individualized because you're going through all these different tests. How like you develop their little program, and then how often do you meet with them? Do you meet with them weekly, biweekly, or?
The Orton-Gillingham Academy recommends that students meet one-on-one at least twice a week for about 45 to 60 minutes. I have some students that just don't have that in their schedule. And so some tutors will not meet with students less than that. I do. Progress is obviously slower because we're not working as much. But I've had students still be really successful. And so I'm not a tutor that draws that line and say, if you can't commit to at least 2 or 3 days a week, then I won't even touch the situation. But I do warn parents that, you know, progress may not be as quick and as smooth as you might hope it would be at that rate. And
So when you, so you, we talked about a little bit, using sensory, using visual, using auditory. What, like, give us like an example of how you use all those sensory items, the kinesthetic sense. I really like that because I, when I'm teaching handwriting, especially to kids with, developmental delays, with fine motor delays, I do a lot of sensory. Especially with correct letter formation, proper directionals, when they're forming their letters, all this stuff. How do you use all those types of sensory?
a lot of the sensory that I do is just in writing with a pencil on a piece of paper. And then we combine it with seeing that information and having something auditory with it. So, for example, when I teach that C versus K skill, when I first introduced it, I give them a sheet and it says curvy C comes before curvy A, curvy O, and curvy U. And we talk through it and we talk about it. I show them some example words, and then we trace. And for some students, I'll even put a piece of plastic canvas underneath their paper, so it gets even more texture than just a regular sheet of paper. And we'll trace that C and the A and the O and the U while we say that rule that's written there. So curvy C goes with curvy A, comes before curvy A, curvy O, and curvy U. We'll repeat that. They'll trace it a few times. Then I'll have them write it on their own while they say it. And then I'll cover it up and have them do it from memory. And then I have them close their eyes and do it one more time, which helps build that kind of movie in their mind. So as they're doing this, when I'm not there to guide them, they kind of have that movie of what needs to happen.
That's excellent. And then how long do they stay on the program? Like you said, twice a week for 60 minutes, but how long are they on that? Is there an end point?
It really depends. Another one of those key pieces of Orton-Gillingham is that it's prescriptive and diagnostic. So we're working, the kind of the key phrase is that we're working as quickly as possible, but as slow as necessary. And so I have one student that I've worked with who has some co-occurring diagnoses that we have made very little progress in 2 years. Now, for this particular student, we've gone huge gains. Most students, it's 2, 3, maybe 4 years. But at that point, then we're also getting into some bigger pieces. We're getting into morphology, we're getting into Latin roots and Greek combining forms and all of these other great things. It's not just the simple basic spelling rules at year 2, 3, 4.
And I imagine that helps with vocabulary and understanding context and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Language is key in education. It's how we express ideas, it's how we receive ideas, it's how we exchange ideas and how students learn. If we don't have good communication or good language in school and there's a breakdown, it can be very frustrating to a kiddo who has difficulty expressing themselves, verbally or in handwriting. And it can also be very frustrating for the teacher. So alternate forms of language and communication are key. And there are different forms, but I have to say American Sign Language is one way that we can communicate with kiddos in the educational setting. And I use simple signs all the time. But Stephanie, she has had years of experience teaching people from baby all the way up to seniors American Sign Language. She teaches group classes as well as in the public schools, and she even gives workshops to parents in her community. All right, so you also provide another, even though you're an inter, you know, you may started as an interpreter, you also teach American Sign Language and give us an idea of the lifespan that you teach there.
Yeah, so my Orton-Gillingham pieces focus mostly on school-aged kids. But my ASL classes, I teach a variety of classes. So I have had babies as young as 6 weeks old, and I have retired senior citizens in some of my adult classes, and then everything in between. So I have the whole lifespan.
And so with, I work a lot with preschooler school age and teenage kids. What does like, first of all, how do you get into like a school system to start teaching the ASL to these kiddos?
Can't even tell you now how those connections were made in the first place. It must have just been word of mouth. Somebody took an infant toddler class and then was in preschool and said, "Hey, you've got to check this out." It's a fairly small community that we're out there, so somebody's looking for a teacher and like, "That's exactly what I do." But there's not a hard line there.
I know because well, and I'm thinking about it in the school systems where I teach, we use signs, especially kids that may not have not are not verbal. It's not they might not even be on the spectrum or autistic. It's just that they use them just for communication to prevent frustration. Because I'll tell you
They
something,
work really well.
when kids can't communicate, that's when you see a lot of these behaviors come out, the people call behaviors or
Exactly.
not paying attention, or a lot of times it's a communication problem. So when you go into these preschool class, or actually let's start at the infant level, like you have your own infant class that you teach in the community then?
I do. So we it's a play-based class. It's kind of like I use the term semi-structured play date. So I have a plan. I only bring certain toys with me to each class. Babies aren't necessarily apt to follow my plan, so we tend to follow their plan and make it work. But we hit in the infant class the typical most important concepts. Daily routines, mealtime, animals, sports, outdoor play, those kinds of things that are really important to families with really young children. And I give them some tools and strategies. We talk about language development, we talk about literacy development and how to use signs when they're reading, those sorts of things. And then we play. So if we're talking about animals, I bring puppets and I bring stuffed animals and I have ride-on animals. We're using large muscles, small muscles. If I have a little bit older group, we'll do things like Play-Doh or other sensory bins and just things that we can use to try to pull those signs out that we're learning and get a chance to practice with them. But they're also getting a chance to interact with other kids and just have a lot of fun.
And then when you go to these preschool classes, what would like a typical ASL instruction with those that age group look like?
We do lots of games and songs. So I kind of envision it like the typical circle time in a classroom. And we hit, again, the important topics. We talk about weather, we talk about feelings, we talk about colors. And then we play some sort of game with those signs or sing some sort of song with those signs, just some way to practice with them. One of my preschoolers' favorite games is the Mouse in the House. I don't know if you use that game at all, but I when we learn colors, especially, I have a felt board that I bring with me, and I have all kinds of different colored houses. I have a little felt mouse who likes to hide in the houses, so they all cover their eyes. I hide them, and we have a little rhyme, but it forces them to choose a color and sign that color. And then we check, is the mouse in the house? Oh, he's not there. Let's try again. And that is an absolute favorite game that I have adapted to several other concepts because they are constantly asking to play that game.
Also have programs for the school age children and then the teenagers.
Yeah, so my elementary kids, we work a lot on letters, numbers, colors, and a lot of what they're interested in. We often talk about animals and food and sports. Try to get some feeling signs in there with those guys. And we still play some games that looks a little bit different. Sometimes we'll learn to sign a storybook that's got a lot of repetition in it. I try to encourage them to interact with each other a little bit. That's some groups it goes better than others. And then with my teens and adults, I use a common curriculum that a lot of the high schools and colleges use, and we follow that. And it's a little more of a traditional language class in that sense. I typically teach what most would consider kind of level one, level two. So they might do some very basic storytelling. They do more personal narratives. One of the first ones that we talk about is our language backgrounds. So we learn the common languages that somebody might have learned in high school if they're a college student or an older adult. And we talk about what I spoke growing up, what I learned in high school. And then, did I find it easy? Do I still remember it? So more personal narratives than interpretive pieces.
And then with your adults, like do you have like a reoccurring class, or do you, I know you said you use more of the curriculum, but do like for the older, I'm just curious, is there any difference between the, college and teens?
Really, most of my classes are a mix where I have my senior citizens and my high school kids together, which is a little bit of a trip sometimes. They're not always on the same page with each other, just in life. So they learn different things from each other, which is always fun.
Like I said earlier, Stephanie also educates parents and caregivers and teachers out there through workshops about American Sign Language and how they can use it as a means of early communication and long-time learning through fun and developmentally appropriate activities. We went into a little bit of a discussion when I was talking to Stephanie about these workshops, who they are for. And she actually, if you were in the Northeast Ohio area, she does have some workshops coming up in December of 2023. All right, so finally, I wanted to talk, you have a bunch of, we were talking a little bit about the workshops that you also give to, and this is mainly to adults, correct?
Right. So where the playing classes for the infants and toddlers, and then for the older toddlers and preschoolers, we get down on the floor and we're learning through play. They take several weeks and they're a pretty big time commitment. So the workshops are a way for adults to kind of get the same tools and strategies in a shorter, more adult focused session. So they're 1 3-hour session. We learn those tools and strategies. They bring them home and put them into practice. And it's a really nice way for extended family members to get in on what's going on. So even if maybe a mom or a dad and a child are attending the play class, but there's other family members who can't attend every week, it's a great way for them to get the information. It's great for caregivers. It's great for early childhood, childcare providers, preschool teachers. They can all get professional development credit for it. They're approved by the state for that. So that's just an extra bonus.
And then what do you call these workshops?
They are, one is the Signing Smart Workshop for Early Communication. That's geared for infants and toddlers. And the other one is the Signing Smart Workshop for Long-Term Learning, which is more geared for talking toddlers. So 2-ish all the way up until they're ready for kindergarten.
Okay, great. Excellent. And then how often do you give these workshops a year?
I usually try to have a public available session twice a year. But several other schools or groups have hosted them on their own. So just for their staff or just for their members. And those are always a welcome addition to my calendar.
And you just basically have connections that you've made over the years, and that's how people find out about you, huh?
Yeah, you know, once somebody reached out through LinkedIn, and that made a great connection. But other than that, it's frequently parents who go back to their childcare providers and say, "Hey, you guys need in on this. Like, this has been great for us." Or, you know, passing it on to friends as they have new babies and things like that.
So, are you giving any workshops in the near future?
I do. I'm doing both of them in one day. They're coming up. It's a Saturday, it's December 2nd. We're going to do the early communication workshop in the morning and then the long-term learning workshop in the afternoon I actually use a yoga studio in Macedonia, and we set up some tables and projector for our videos and all of that and spend the day hanging out there.
So now I know this is all in Ohio. Is there any, do you do anything virtually, or is it just
Do some virtually. I have done some virtually. We, especially when COVID and everything went virtual, we adjusted as much as we could. I think that there are some benefits to doing things in person that I can't necessarily replicate virtually. But I think there's some cool things we can do virtually that I can't necessarily replicate in person either. So it's an option.
Well, I'm going to ask you to provide some links for me that I can put in my show notes.
Absolutely.
Reach out to you, because I think a lot of the services that you are giving are excellent and much needed. And it's a resource that, a lot of parents, you know, these days I always get the question, because my caseload is always growing. It's every year my caseload grows every year. And people often ask me, why do you think that your caseload is growing? What's, you know, what's the issue? And I said, I think that honestly, healthcare providers are becoming more educated about services that are out there for their kid, for kiddos, as well as parents are becoming much more educated. So like services like yours, I think a lot of parents, especially, you know, you don't have to be deaf to just use sign language, right? You can be a person that has problems communicating and you need a different way to communicate, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I as an interpreter have worked with adults with a variety of reasons that they sign, whether or not they have hearing loss. I've worked with some students who have apraxia and use both ASL and speech kind of together. And my infant toddler classes, I frequently have students and families who either have a diagnosed speech delay or concerns about a speech delay or had a sibling with a speech delay. And there's some extra benefits for those kids on top of the benefits that any typically developing child gets from having access to ASL.
So it's an excellent resource, I think, for parents, for educators. Like I said, I know that the speech therapists that I work with, the teachers that I work with, a lot of signing does go on. I'm sure it's just super basic stuff that we're doing, but it is a way of communicating. Like I said, communication is so key with some of our kiddos. It's
absolutely. And I love getting into a classroom and saying, let's bump this up. You know, you've got three or four that you're using. Let's bump this up. Let's get you even more benefit from what you're doing. And that's the beauty of the long-term learning workshop is we talk a lot about how do you use the signs that you know, however many that is, more powerfully and more broadly. So what do you do when you're in a situation and you don't know the sign that you would prefer? How do you use what you do know in that situation?
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, give me some of those links so I can include in the show notes. And also, if you could provide your like website, and because I looked through your website, it's so interesting, read through it. And especially to the classes that you offer to kiddos out there for parents to know about. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, thanks a lot, Stephanie. I really appreciate you coming by and providing this information for my listeners. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I love getting the word out there. So the more the merrier.
Thank you, Stephanie, for coming by. Appreciate you and all that you do in our community. I am going to include links to Stephanie's website, Signing with Stephanie, in the show notes. So if you're interested, check it out. And like I said, she will be conducting workshops coming up in December. Have a great week and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.